NBA star LeBron James and comedian Kevin Hart used their platform and wealth in a very big and very public way this month. James partnered with his home school district to fund an $8 million public school for third and fourth graders, while Hart established a $600,000 scholarship fund for college-bound students. Their charity was met with near-universal praise. Education has historically been seen as one of the most reliable vehicles for Black progress, and both men funneled their wealth into a space under-supported by national and local government. But is giving an education scalable? Elizabeth Taub Breland is a professor of history at the University of Illinois at Chicago and the author of A Political Education, Black Politics and Education Reform in Chicago Since the 1960s. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you recently wrote a piece for The Undefeated where you praise LeBron James' philanthropy, but you do say that there is a disappointing trend in education that needs to not get ignored here. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, so one, I don't at all want to discourage people from providing money and using their charitable funds to support education causes. I think that's wonderful. But I do think that we need to take a step back and think about what it means for public education to rely too much on philanthropy. And I think it does two things. I think one, it relieves the government of their responsibility to provide equal access to public accommodations, and particularly to provide quality education for all students. And I think the other thing it does is open the doors even further for corporate models that have been dominant within the public education sphere for the last 25 to 30 years that are generally less accountable and very often less connected to the communities they serve. Now, in the case of LeBron James School, he certainly had a different type of connection to the community, and from the reports I've read, really reached out to folks who are already doing this work in Akron and the public school system as it was to participate. But I think generally the corporate model has not done that.
And what stands out to you about the particular I Promise school model?
So one of the things that I think has been highlighted and that's really great are the wraparound services provided by the I Promise schools. So things like extended after school care, food assistance for families, educational opportunities for parents and students, health and mental health care on site. So really making the school a community school. And in fact, the idea of having schools as community anchors and community schools is a really long idea that's been pushed forth, particularly in Black communities. I think about this in the 1960s and 70s with the push for community control of schools that asked for many of the same things, but particularly asked for state resources to be controlled by the community in a way that supported communities holistically using schools as a central site.
And it's been a year since the NAACP, for example, took the big step of actually calling for a ban on new charter schools. But since then, they've decided to dial back the criticism of charter schools. How do you see that?
So I think individually, there have been charter schools that people can talk about as success stories and students have benefited from. I think overall, charter school teachers are dedicated teachers, often getting paid less than traditional public school teachers, so working very hard. But systemically, the effect of charter schools on public education has been devastating, particularly for communities of color and low-income communities. So there's actually a recent study that came out using Chicago as an example that showed that charter schools were being built in Black communities with a declining population of school-age students, and really contributed to the rash of school closings. I believe this was by Stephanie Farmer at Roosevelt University, to this rash of school closings. Charter schools have, and sort of privatization more generally, vouchers, et cetera, has contributed to the decline in the number of Black teachers, to the rise of sort of a no-excuses disciplinary policies that disproportionately push out students into the school-to-prison pipeline, and then just generally concerns about sort of a lack of oversight. What does it mean for institutions that are supposed to be a guaranteed public good to be overseen by sometimes for-profit entities, and the ways that that's bred corruption, I think, have been really problematic.
I think you're right. It was supposed to be a guaranteed public good. I mean, I myself am a graduate of all, you know, public school from the day one, and I can tell you that there are, as you know, especially in low-income Black and brown communities, lots of issues with the quality of the education there. However, when I see things like what Kevin Hart is doing and what LeBron James are doing, I can't help but think about, and maybe this is an inaccurate comparison, but places like historically Black colleges and universities that essentially were created to serve and provide these services for communities that were either being discriminated against or just not being served. And so it was sort of a do it for yourself, you know, for us and by us kind of thing. Who can really push the federal government and federal education resources to do more at this point?
Yeah, so I think, one, you tap on a very important long history of African Americans being intimately involved in founding schools. You see this coming out of slavery during Reconstruction, of communities pooling resources and creating schools and really creating the infrastructure for the public education system in the South, and then continuously through historically Black colleges and universities, although sometimes founded by white missionaries, certainly have been at the forefront of providing education for Black students. You see this with independent schools and community schools. And I don't want to discredit that at all. I think that's super important and a big part of the history of Black education in this country. But I think these questions of scale and the question of who is currently serving the majority of students requires us to demand something of our government. And I think it's important that we don't decide to opt out of demanding something of our government. And I don't think it only happens at the federal level, because so much of school funding happens at the local level. I live in Chicago. It's a city that's dominated by mayoral control. So there's very little democracy in public education. One of the things that people are pushing for in the city is a representative elected school board, so that communities can actually have a say in what happens in schools. I think models like sustainable community schools that are being pushed across the country, and actually, again, just recently in Chicago, both the public school system and the teachers union have come together to create 20 such model schools with these wraparound services. So I think there's a place for us as a populace, for us as parents, as community members, to push for the schools that we know our students deserve with those tax dollars that we're already paying.
Elizabeth Todd Breland is a professor of history at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Elizabeth, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.